right now you're feeling a bit like Alice, tumbling down the rabbit hole? This is your last chance. After this, there is no turning back. You take the blue pill. The story ends. You wake up in your bed and believe whatever you want to believe. You take the red pill. You stay in Wonderland. And I show you how deep the rabbit hole goes.
Deeper Down the Rabbit Hole. Now live. Tuesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Para-X Radio Network.
Thank you again to the Illuminous for that great original music. Good evening, everyone. This is your host, Jason Michael Caldwell. It is Tuesday night once again here on the Para-X Network. So, I want to remind everyone that though Andrea is working on some special projects right now, the old Magical 30 site, still available at magical30.com, which is now DoMagic.com will get you to the current site as well. The URL will be permanently changing to DoMagic.com. Go out and check out the 30-day challenges, folks. Get out there, participate. The June project is underway right now. Participation is always free. And in August, we're going to be bringing some winners of the challenges onto the air. So, please, go check out DoMagic.com. Tonight's guest, Jennifer Weigel. She is an award-winning broadcast journalist based out of Chicago, Illinois. She won an Emmy for her on-camera reporting for CBS and has also worked for ABC, NBC, WGN, and WLS Radio. Jen's real love is adding humor to life's tragedies through her writing. She has written three other books, including I'm Spiritual, Damn It, which has become the title of her ongoing podcast that she hosts on WGN Plus, and you can find a link to that on our website as well. Jennifer has joined me tonight to talk about her latest book, Psychics, Healers, and Mediums. Now, we are going to be joining Jennifer's interview a couple minutes into progress because while we were originally connecting to the radio network, we had the podcast going up to this point, and for some reason, the direct connection to the station broke. So you're going to miss less than 2 minutes of her intro. And from here on, Jennifer's words.
My best to explain the inexplicable in this book. And, you know, sometimes it's really hard to convince people of your evidence when the evidence is, you know, a medium talking to the ceiling.
So, you know, this is not your first book either.
No, so, it's not. It's actually my fourth. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get some perspective for my audience. Okay. What were the first four books?
And so the first book is called, Stay Tuned. And my dad died of a brain tumor. He was just 56. And he actually wrote a book about Ohio State, actually, way back in the day. He was a sports journalist and became a broadcaster here in Chicago for 25 plus years. And he died at the age of 56 from a brain tumor pretty suddenly. It was pretty awful. And at the time, I was questing for answers, and I was grieving. And anybody out there who is listening who's lost a loved one, you just know what it's like to grieve. You're paralyzed sometimes with everything. Like, you just can't move forward, at least if it's someone you really care about. And I had a pretty close relationship with my dad. So I thought as a journalist, it was kind of my duty to head out and try to find the frauds that were out there taking people's money when they're grieving. And so it's a humorous memoir, believe it or not, about my dad dying. So that's Stay Tuned. And then after I came out, so to speak, with that book, here I was a journalist coming out as somebody who interviewed a couple of healers and mediums, and I tracked down Deepak Chopra and Carolyn Mace and James Van Praagh, and went to a town called Lilydale, which is all spiritualists up in New York, and, you know, kind of dipped my toe in the pond. And when I came out with that book, all these people started sharing their emails with me about their psychic kids and their coincidences that they wanted to proof for and help with, and can you connect me to so-and-so? And so that was the kind of subject matter for my second book, which is called I'm Spiritual, Damn It. And then my third book, I started doing a lot of interviews with people who were having near-death experiences and basically dying and living to talk about it. Like, so at the time I was also going through a divorce, which was really chaotic, which was like a death also. So it's a humorous memoir about getting divorced and a bunch of near-death experiences. So I've always sort of peppered in the paranormal with my life stories. But this fourth book is strictly me heading out and interviewing 8, you know, well-known / bestsellers in this space, in the woo-woo space, if you call it that, and not really making it a memoir, so to speak, but chronicling the experiences, bringing with me strangers that they can't possibly Google ahead of time, and then documenting those encounters. And I tell people, look, I'm not trying to convince anyone to believe or not to believe. I'm just putting out the evidence, and then they can decide for themselves what it is that they believe in.
I was into the occult and paranormal. I was a paranormal investigator for the past 20 years myself, mm-hmm. trying to see if these things were real and legitimate. And in my adventures, I've met psychics who convinced me because they told me things about my life that there's no way they could have known.
Right. Right.
And unfortunately, you and I share something in common. My father passed away about 7 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I was already a believer in these things at that time. So for you, who was the first psychic or the first medium who convinced you that they were pulling information that they should not have known about you?
Well, my very first encounter with someone like that was when I was in my 20s and I was just starting out in broadcasting, and a friend dragged me to a psychic out in Rockford, Illinois, and she lived in a farmhouse, right? You know, she wasn't selling a book and she wasn't well known. She was just a lady who'd been doing this out of her farm for a long time.
Okay.
Her name is Denise Gazzardo, and she's still doing it now. And Denise, we trekked out there. My friend promised she didn't give her any information about me ahead of time. She just gave her my first name, which is Jen. I mean, hello, how many Jens do you have?
Right.
And she pulled out stuff about, you know, my future husband and my job and all these things that I was like, they were not, Google didn't exist at the time, but they also weren't searchable, and they also weren't things that my friend knew, so my friend couldn't have told her those things because she didn't know those things. So that sort of left me scratching my head, you know. And then as I got into the broadcasting career, I was working for CBS, and James Van Praagh, who many know, had just had his New York Times bestseller, Talking to Heaven, and he was promoting his next book, Reaching to Heaven, and he was coming through Chicago, and I begged my producer to let me interview him because I thought, you know, I want to see what this guy's got under the cap. And I had no idea if I would believe him or not, and I had no idea if my producer would allow it or not, because it's not like CBS is really hip on mediums or psychics. And so I did convince her because he's a best-selling author off the New York Times list, and she thought, well, at least there's that. So he came to my house and interviewed me, and my father-in-law at the time had just passed away, and he brought up stuff about the will that had been changed. Again, stuff that nobody knew.
Right.
And so I took that footage and I brought it to my mother-in-law and showed it to her, and she was so blown away. You know, this is a diehard Catholic who thought I was going straight to hell for even interviewing James Van Praagh.
Oh, wow.
And she basically, the next time I went to visit her, she had all of James's books on her nightstand.
So out of curiosity, he's not one that was included in this particular book. Is there any reason why
he
not working with him?
Well, he was in my first book. I covered him a lot in my first book, Stay Tuned.
Okay.
And I told that story in Stay Tuned, yes. And so for the current book, Psychic Healers and Mediums, I have Thomas John, The Manhattan Medium is chapter one. Then we go to Echo Bodine out of Minnesota. The other Bodines, there's Michael and Nikki Bodine. There's like a whole Bodine dynasty up in Minnesota. If anyone wants to road trip up there, it's a hoot, let me tell you. Rebecca Rosen, who's written a couple of New York Times bestsellers, she's out of Denver. Conchetta Bertoldi, Judith Orloff, who was raised very, like, strict medical family in Hollywood. Her parents were doctors, MDs, didn't want to hear about her gifts, so much so that they institutionalized her, poor thing. And so she turned to drugs and alcohol to cope and then got out of, you know, the institution, and she realized, wait a minute, I've got a gift here. She got a psychiatrist who told her to embrace her intuition and that it's real. So she did, and it changed her life. And now she's a psychiatrist herself, a very intuitive psychiatrist. So Judith Orloff, and then Paul Selig, who was a New York, let's see, he was a professor at NYU for 25 years, minding his own business, having a great time, and woke up one day, and now he's a channeler, which means he stands in front of a room and these messages are downloaded. And I'm not kidding you when I tell you his eyes change color. It is trippy with a capital T. I wouldn't have believed it had I not seen it for myself. And then the final chapter is Carolyn Mace, who is a medical intuitive, another woman minding her own business, and her gift hit her in her 30s. So it's fascinating to me the variety of some people, it came to them when they were kids. They had it since they could remember. And other people, it showed up when they were full grown adults.
So the people that it came to them as adults, mm-hmm. is there any commonality? Did they seek it? Or did some of them seek it and some of them found it accidentally?
A part of them deep down did seek it. I mean, Carolyn Mace admits that while it hit her when she was 30, minding her own business, smoking a cigarette and drinking coffee in a parking lot, and somebody walked by her and she was like, I know why that person's sick.
Oh, wow.
She does admit that when she was 8, 9, she could drive by people's houses and she had like this intuition like a bat, like she had a radar, like a sonar. And she knew what was going on in certain people's houses. It was really wild. So she kind of had x-ray vision since she was a kid, but it wasn't exactly something that she brought up at the playground. So that was for her. And Paul Selig, again, a professor, always curious. And it, for him, what really heightened his gifts was actually sobriety. And that's another through line for some of these people. You know, the Bodines all talk about being in recovery. You know, they turned to drugs and alcohol to sort of deal with their gifts because they couldn't deal with their gifts. And right. then when they got the drugs and alcohol out of their system, their gifts just went on overload, like amped up big time.
You know, it's funny. It's really not funny. It's sad because mm-hmm. a Christian friend of mine who will remain nameless, random mm-hmm. Facebook posts earlier in the week was, prayer is when you talk to God. Schizophrenia mm-hmm. is when God talks back. And
that's terrible.
Yeah, because for one, I met gifted psychics / mediums mm-hmm. who thoroughly thought, you know, their view of it, their paradigm is that when they mm-hmm. go into these trance states, God is talking back to them. That's how they cope with the information right. they're getting back in return.
And what do these super religious people think is happening when these people start speaking in tongues, you know, in these random churches in the South? I mean, that's God talking to you, but this other stuff is not okay? I mean,
well,
I'm so tired of all these rules.
What I've saw in the Pentecostal church is what mm-hmm. those of us who are familiar with voodoo call possession. So,
right.
I'm not going to pull any punches there. It's okay. The Holy Ghost is coming down on you. Well, there's a spirit taking mm-hmm. control of you and speaking through you in some way, shape, or form.
Right. 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 And that's what happens to Paul Selig. Although, thankfully, his are very polite. Like, one of them is like Richard Burton on stage in the 60s at the Globe Theater in London, I swear. It's like, and no! You know, he's like a Shakespearean actor. So at least they're not screaming and their head's not spinning around, but... You know, it is very interesting to watch someone go through that process. And I just interviewed Paul here in Chicago. He came up and did an event, and we got on the stage, and he talked about what goes on for him. And then he got up and gave a message to the room. And to see these women from, like, the North Shore of Chicago who have, like, their pearls on and their little sweater sets and their clutch purses, watch a guy channeling nine spirits. You know, it was a little bit out of their comfort zone, but I think they got a lot out of it, and nobody left running and screaming, so that's a good sign, right?
That's a very good sign in this line of work,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, I mean, you got to start somewhere.
So, Jen, tell me, let's take a logical order here. We'll talk about Thomas John, the Manhattan medium. Now, what's his claim to fame? What's his level of expertise?
Well, he was a guy who grew up in Plainville, Massachusetts, okay? So nothing exciting going on in Plainville, let me tell you. But he was abused by his dad. They did not believe in his gifts. He talked to his grandpa since he was 4 years old, and his parents were scared. You know, his mom took him to every priest, rabbi, therapist, you know, thought he was ADD, ADHD, possessed. They didn't know what to do. And, you know, he would know things before they happened. He would, you know he went walking around New York after 9/11. He saw very disoriented spirits, you know, clutching their briefcase and looking for loved ones. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he basically was like, well, now what do I do? My parents don't believe me. My dad locks me in the closet and doesn't feed me. So he shut it down for a while and then went through a really tumultuous time in his 20s, you know, just kind of trying to find himself, partying, mixed up with the wrong crowd. And then he finally kind of embraced his gift and realized that what he was doing is not a bad thing. His dad finally went to jail for the bad stuff that he was doing, and that kind of helped get the negativity out of his space. And so he was able to, and his mom is now his biggest fan. I mean, she is an absolute complete believer, thinks that he speaks with angels and with the God, and you know, she can really, really get behind what he decided to kind of get on the straight and narrow. His gift then also magnified. So I've seen Thomas now. We were introduced by our publisher, and my publisher called me and said, have I got a medium for you? And I was like, if I hear that one more time, I mean, I get that all the time. But again, I sat down to meet with him, and he brought up stuff that nobody could Google and stuff that is not searchable anywhere. That impressed me. And so we have been working together on and off. You know, when he comes through town, we do shows. And he is really sharp. He brings up names like nobody's business. And we do these events where it's random seating. You know, it's open seating. So if he points to somebody in the third row with a red sweater and says, I have your daughter here. And she's telling me that she's glad you saved her Prince album. You know, I mean, people will say to me after a show, I get this a lot. They're like, okay, so you must have been scanning the crowd for that woman, told Thomas where the woman was. Then the two of you were backstage and you were giving Thomas all the notes of where to point. And I mean, I'm not kidding. I get the craziest accusations because it's easier for people to think that we're plotting this whole thing than to think that somebody's actually talking to the dead,
which
is unfortunate.
And also the unfortunate thing is, though, there is a business centered around that model.
Oh, sure. Of course. I know that it's like there are bad people in every business, right? Doctors, used car salesmen, accountants. You know, you're going to find them in every profession. But unfortunately, there are some shyster psychic mediums that, you know, made a career out of doing just that very thing. And so, you know, I get that. And also, it also wears on me because that puts my integrity up to question. And
yes.
I pride myself on my integrity. I won an Emmy for my integrity. So it's hard to hear, but I get it. I really do. It's still hard to hear.
Well, you know, I really appreciate what you were doing because I get so frustrated. It's just when you've had legitimate experiences, when you work with other people that have legitimate experiences, it's always the people who don't have integrity and are putting on a show that seem to get all the media attention. Now, you're actually going out there and you're trying to put attention on people who you have put through the tests yourself. I like that.
Exactly. And that's the thing, too, is maybe some people have a bad day and it might not be exceptional. I mean, there's one instance where also, too, people who are grieving, sometimes they just don't want to hear anything. So all this evidence could be on the table in front of them, and they still aren't hearing it. They're like, no, that doesn't match. No, that could be for anybody. I mean, that was one of my cases with Echo Bodine in the next chapter. After Thomas, I brought this friend of mine who'd lost her son, and Echo brought through what seemed to me to be her son. And she's like, she could have said that to any grieving mother. And I'm like, well, my kid's personality is pretty different than the one that she described. Not every child is the same. Not every child has 500 friends. Not every child is the life of the party. You know, she really was specific with her kid's personality, and she still wanted to discount it. Because, again, I think grief is debilitating, and unless they come barreling through, like hugging you themselves, they're not going to believe it.
And that's the thing, you know, people have to realize that the reason there's terms used in the business like tuning in, or why a medium is interchangeable with channeler. It's this whole idea of there's a connection, there's a strength of signal in a sense. So you're absolutely correct. Some days are better than others for these people. So,
and some people come through stronger. Like I remember an event with Thomas John, and he points to this lady and he tells her that her landlord comes through like loud and clear. And he's like, she's got a French accent. And the lady was laughing so hard. Like, are you kidding me? You are bringing through my landlord. And she said to me afterwards, she's like, you know, I would have loved to have heard from my dad, but apparently he was busy and my landlord was available. Like, what the heck? You just don't know who's going to show up and be chatty, I guess.
So, let's hear more about this Bodine family. Echo, and now, are these folks brothers and sisters, cousins? Is it even more scattered than that?
No. It's brothers and sisters, so it's kind of a cool story. They're having dinner one night, and the upper, you know, they're like upper middle class Minnesota family minding their own business, having dinner. And a brother was downstairs playing the drums, and says a ghost walked through the wall, came right up to him while he was practicing, stared at him, then helped him play like really well. I guess this was a former musician ghost.
Nice.
And then walked right out the wall. And he was so freaked out that he ran upstairs to the rest of the family that was having dinner in the kitchen and screamed his head off and told them what happened. And they were like, yeah, right. Nice try. Let's all just wait for Casper. You know, they thought it was a bunch of hooey. And so after that, things started going bump in the night on a very frequent basis. Like cabinets are opening, the Lazy Susan's turning on its own. They were hearing a typewriter in the hallway, all sorts of crazy stuff. And it got to the point where they couldn't even have friends come over after school because they were being called the haunted house. They would, you know, stuffed animals would start getting thrown across the room. It was really nuts. So May Bodine, the mother, goes and seeks out. Now, this is back in the 60s where nobody was talking about mediums and psychics, really. I mean, Edgar Casey was around, but it's not like there was a section in Barnes & Noble for this stuff.
Right.
So she goes to a local church, a spiritualist church, you know, in the basement of a regular church, and asks for help. And they said, you need to go talk to this medium. She lives over here, la, 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 la. Here's her phone number. So May calls this woman, and this woman says to her, I've been expecting your call. Bring your oldest daughter and come meet me right away. So she takes Echo, that's her oldest daughter, Echo Bodine, to go and meet. And the woman tells her basically that three of your four children will be, known for their psychic and mediumship abilities. And two of them will be healers. One of them will come into their gifts later in life. And they were driving home like, what the heck? Now what? And they also told Echo that she would start using her hands to heal, and that night she would get home and her hands would be so hot that her dad would complain of a migraine, and it was her job to put her hands on her dad's head and cure his migraine. And sure enough, she gets home, dad complains of the migraine. She's like, Dad, this is going to sound kind of strange, but can I try to heal your headache? He's like, do whatever you want, you know? So she did. She put her hands on his head, poof, the headache goes away. And he's like, I don't care what you did, but you know, keep doing it. So it was from that moment on. Echo was 17. Nikki didn't embrace her gifts until she was in her 40s. She was literally at a funeral, and the dead guy that was in the casket sat next to her at the funeral and said, well, hi, Nikki. I'm so glad you're here. Oh, and wow. She was like, I guess I do have it. So she embraced it later in her 40s. And Michael was psychic since he was like 7 or 8. And he actually lost his gift. It's a really interesting story. He lost his gift for about a year and a half because his ego got in the way. You know, we talked about some of these shysters that are out there getting exposure on TV. Mm-hmm. Well, what happens after a while, if they do try to BS too many people, the universe or God or whatever you want to call it takes their gift away. And that's what happened to Michael. He thought he was too good and too cool for school. So he's on a radio interview just like this. And the host is asking him questions and asking him for a reading. And he's like, oh, sure, I'll give you a reading right here. I got your reading. So he barks out a bunch of information, and every single thing he said was wrong. Everything. Mm. Not one thing was right. And it was the same inner voice that he'd always heard the right information about, right? So he's really confused and terrified. So he comes out of the interview, and his teacher, this woman named Birdie, was standing there, and she said, I heard what happened. I was worried this was going to happen to you. It means you got to come down a few notches. So his gift was completely gone. So he went and got a job at Best Buy selling appliances. True story. And one day, he's like selling some lady a refrigerator or something, and all this information comes barreling through for her, and he starts sharing it with her, and she's crying in his arms, and he's like, it's back! So he has been much more humble ever since, let's just say.
You know, I'll throw my two cents in. I'll say your gift going away is when you get nothing. But when you get, this is just my opinion. My opinion does not reflect Jennifer or anyone else.
But when you get wrong?
When you get very dramatic wrong information, that's the spirits going, yeah, you're going to get taught a lesson.
Exactly. You're right. And that's totally what happened. It's like, it's time for some karma here, honey. Here goes nothing.
Hey, just like good physical teachers.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of the Bodines. In fact, I'm going up to Minnesota to do a live event with them at a theater on June 16th and just interview them on stage, and then they're going to give live readings to the crowd. And it's cool to see how they work, because Echo really likes to talk about people's challenges that come up again and again and again. Like if you keep having people not appreciate you at work, or you keep having failed relationships or whatever it is, she thinks there might be some past lives attached that can help you deconstruct and better understand why it is you keep having the same chaos over and over again in the same sort of subject matter. And whereas Michael just wants to tell you what opportunities are there that your guides want you to seize, you know, like that, don't let your fear stop you. Just jump in with both feet. And then Nikki just wants to talk to dead people. That's it. She's really, I mean, she does some psychic reading stuff if it comes through, but she's all about talking to your dead relatives. So, you know, everybody works a little differently, especially the three of the, you know, the Bodines. So it should be interesting.
Oh, wow. And go ahead and put out there, like, where can people go if they want to try to find tickets for this event?
Oh, yeah. You know what? Just go to my website, jenweigel.com. And I also have some shows in Chicago with Thomas John coming up, you know, Monday, June 12th, Tuesday, June 13th, and 14th, Wednesday the 14th in the Chicago area. So jenweigel.com, just click on the gigs tab and you can find some stuff there. We'll be hopping around this summer for sure.
So, Rebecca Rosen. Is it Rosen or Rosen?
Yeah. It's Rosen, yeah. Rebecca's okay. Really a cool story, because here's a girl who was kind of going through a depression when she was 19 in college, and she was journaling. So automatic writing, some people say, you can just start writing and then you'll get a download and you'll get a message, right? Some people get their information that way. Even James Van Praagh does a little scribbling, you know, before he starts a reading sometimes. At least that's how he started. And so Rebecca was just doing some journaling, and her grandmother, who died when she was very young, came through and had some specific messages for her dad, who unfortunately found his own mother dead. She'd committed suicide. And so there were a few things that he never shared with anyone. And Rebecca was told those things by the grandmother. So Rebecca called her dad and said, hey, Dad, Nana came to me and I got some news for you. This is what she wanted me to tell you. And he was like, okay, you have a gift. I don't know how this works, but, you know, I hope you can help other people, because this is immensely helpful. It changed everything. So she embraced it. And so hers was, you know, kind of brought through a depression. And now, I mean, she's out of Denver. She had a TV show on Lifetime for a season. She's like the girl next door medium. You know, she's got a husband. They're like the Brady Bunch. He had a couple kids from a previous marriage. She had a couple kids from a previous marriage. Now they're all one big happy family. And I sat in on one of her spirit circles, which is 8 people sitting around, and she sits in the middle and just gets messages for a couple hours for those in the room. And it was really powerful stuff. I mean, again, what's not Googleable always makes me kind of take pause. And she's looking at the room, and she says, I have a Richard here, and nobody's claiming the guy. Like, nobody raises their hand. Nobody's got a Richard, not even a distant cousin. There is no Richard to be found.
Okay.
And she looks over at me, and she says, this could apply to anyone in this room. Who has a father-in-law named Richard? Well, my former father-in-law was Richard.
Oh.
So I go, that would be me. She's like, okay, hold on. Why is Richard here? Richard, what would you like to tell her? Richard had a very specific message for his son, my ex-husband. And we're good friends, so I could relay the message. And I guess Richard figured my ex would never make his way to Rebecca Rosen. So let's use Jen. She's available. She's the phone line for the day. And it was really specific stuff about their relationship. He was apologizing for not being there as dad. He was very, very busy with work and not present at all, was not an ideal dad, not nurturing at all. You know, a good provider, but not emotionally, you know, nurturing. And so it was really cool because that's not stuff that you could Google and not stuff that I've ever really talked about until I wrote about that in the book. And that was way after the fact when Rebecca brought that through. So that was pretty neat. And then I brought my one friend with me, and I didn't give Rebecca any information about her. I don't even think I gave her her first name. And we showed up, and she read my friend like a book. It was really wild. Her dad came barreling through, and she wasn't there when her dad passed, and she knew all this. So I was very, very impressed with her gift.
So, Jennifer, you could plead the fifth. It's okay. I won't bug you any further. But I need to ask, okay?
Yeah.
You've really gotten to know these people. You've gotten close to these people. You've become a believer in these gifts.
I have definitely seen.
Have you wanted to seek it out yourself and develop it yourself?
Well, it's funny you should ask that. So Echo Bodine teaches a class on developing your own intuitive gifts because she truly believes we are all born with it and we can develop it, but it's like going to the gym. You know, you got to build up the muscle over and over and over again. You can't run a marathon unless you run 6 miles, then 10 miles, then 12 miles and build up to it. So I have definitely been trying to build up my own intuitive muscles on my own time. Like if the phone buzzes before I reach for it to see who it is, I kind of get quiet, get centered, and see if I can know who it is. You know, little things like that. I have not gone off to an ashram and you know, or a silent retreat for a week and tried to get clear on that. I don't have the time, unfortunately, in my life or the patience. But I have dabbled in some classes, and I'll tell you, I've taken Reiki. I'm a Reiki master. I did all this reflexology, massage, and Reiki back when my dad was going through chemotherapy treatment. And I just kind of put it to rest for a decade. I didn't want to touch it. I didn't want to think about it. And I just recently resurrected it and had some interesting experiences where if I'm working on a client, I suddenly get these insights and ask them, I know it's going to sound strange, but do you like kale? Because I just saw kale salad, and I'm hearing that you really need kale. And she's like, oh, I used to eat it every day, and I haven't had it for 3 weeks, and I'm craving it so much. You know, and I'm like, wow, that's weird. So, no, folks, I'm not going to put up a shingle. You know, I'm definitely not saying that I'm somebody who has these gifts, so call me, hire me. I'll do your birthday parties. But I am trying very desperately to build up that muscle because, you know, Echo truly thinks we all have it, and I figure it's all of our responsibility to try to develop that if we choose.
Well, Jennifer, I'm going to tell the folks listening out there something. That is one of the most genuine things you could have said. Because I know from your personal experience, when you're working Reiki, when you're working energy work with other people, you do get legitimate psychic impressions. It's like your energies link up, and you get information about that person into your head.
Totally.
And it just flows like that.
It does. And I mean, especially if you put out the intent that you want to give whatever information this person needs for their highest good and their highest healing, you know, and then that's it. I remember I was working on another woman and I just heard to work her legs. I'm like, what the heck? I'm like, sorry, I'm feeling up your legs here, Dory, but here goes nothing. And I just was working her legs. And then I saw a picture of her dancing. And like flamenco dancing, like really kind of like salsa dancing and whipping around. And I'm like, this is going to sound strange, but do you need to go dancing, or have you thought about going dancing? And she just gasped, and she said, my husband and I met at a salsa night at Nationale 27, which is a place here in Chicago, and we actually toured dancing together for a while. And we've been so busy with kids and dogs and everything that we haven't danced in a couple of years, and we need to go dancing. And I've been saying to him, honey, we have to go dancing. And I'm like, well, there's your validation. Would you just go dancing, for gosh sakes? I don't know anything about your dancing history, and that's all I'm seeing. So it was weird, but you're right. I was picking up on her radar because my intent was to help her and to heal. And anybody listening could do this. Anybody. You just have to get quiet enough, quiet the chatter, turn off the phone, turn off the radio. Of course, not until you're done listening to Jason's broadcast. But, you know, turn it off so you can hear the messages that are coming to you.
You know, that's absolutely correct advice. And I think we've brought it up many times on this show, folks. Mm-hmm. If you could just take 20 minutes a day, 20 minutes out of your schedule for quiet meditation time, it will change mm-hmm. your entire attitude.
Totally.
We tend to stay busy. Myself included.
No, we do. You know what? It's interesting. I was recently filling in on a morning show here in Chicago, like morning, you know, the morning, you know. So they, of course, pack it full of interviews with different people, kind of like a circus. And these people were coming in from that TV show, Naked and Afraid. Have you heard of that show?
Yes.
Okay. So I got the cast of Naked and Afraid, but thankfully they weren't naked.
Right.
Talking about their experiences being out in the woods and how they had to eat spiders and crickets and sleep on bark and all this stuff. This one guy who was a Marine told me the most incredible thing. I said, what did you like the most about it? And he said that I was completely unplugged, so much so that I could feel and hear the trees breathing. Now, let's think about that for a minute. This is a Marine, right? And he's used to saving people, and he got so tapped into the elements that he felt like he could hear the trees breathing. Now, that is getting quiet, and that is getting out of your technical womb and really embracing, you know, the silence. And that's, we never do it. We can barely do it for 5 minutes, let alone for 24 hours.
Well, and if you think it's bad for us, those of us over 40, take one of your kids.
Yeah.
Take away all the devices for one day. See what happens. It's like looking at a drug addict.
Mm-hmm. You're right. Just today, my son, we were on the way to school, and he's only 11, right? We just got him this phone a few months ago, and it's mainly, I'll admit it, to track him, because it's like a GPS. You know where they are, right? And so he gets in the car. He looks at me. He's like, where's my phone? I'm like, oh, it's at home. He's like, what am I going to do? I said, you're going to live, and you're going to be great. I mean, we were watching E.T. last night. Wonderful movie if you haven't watched it ever, or if you haven't watched it in a while. Netflix that sucker because it's so timeless. But just the technology issues alone where they go trick-or-treating and there's no, you know, my son was like, well, how are they going to know? Where is the mom going to know where they are and when they need to be home? I said, back in the day, my dear, when I was a little kid, we went where we said we were going to go, and we came home when we said we were going to come home. That's how it works. We didn't change our mind every 15 seconds.
Right. Then there was the streetlight rule. No, we went out
That's
in the neighborhood.
Right.
We stayed within a 3-block radius. When those streetlights came on, we came home.
That's right. That's a great signal. Like, it's like the bat signal. Totally.
So, let's see. We haven't really talked about Concetta, have we?
Oh, my gosh. I just came back from being with Concetta Bertoldi in Long Island. This woman, fascinating medium. She wrote the best-selling book, Do Dead People Watch You Shower? A great book. And she had the gift ever since she was a kid. And she was in her room one night, probably 15, 16 years old, and she opened her eyes, and there was just a party of dead people, just dead people everywhere. And she screamed so loud, her mom and dad came running in, and she told them what she saw. And she was so, like, adamant, like, do you believe me? You have to believe me. And the father actually said, yes, honey, I do believe you. The father's father, apparently, was a really talented medium way long ago. And when Concetta's mother was pregnant with her, this man, her father-in-law, looked at her belly and said, the baby in your belly will speak to the dead, and she will be wonderful at it. And so when Conchetta was born, she had this gift. She had two other siblings as well, two other brothers, but she was the only one that had the gift, and it really became magnified for her when her brother Harold died from AIDS, and he came to her and said, Connie, you got to help all these people who are grieving because you've got a gift and these people need your help, and I will help you from the other side. So he is one of her, he's one of her main go-to guides. And I just watched her do an event. We probably had 65 people in this room, and she read 50 of them. I mean, I'm not kidding. This woman is a powerhouse. She just goes, bam, bam, bam. She knocks them down. I mean, she's doing like 5 minutes with each person. She just goes, boom, boom, like bowling pins. She's knocking them over. It was unbelievable. And I love her because she's so nurturing. She's like the most, she's like the Long Island medium with a bigger heart and more rhinestone. She's really something. And she's like, oh my God, you two's over there, you're adorable. And she's like, I do not have an accent. I'm like, oh, yes, you do.
No, she doesn't. All the rest of us do.
Not in her world. And the rest of us do. Exactly.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so I just adore her. And I really, again, and so when I met with her, I was, for the first time, I brought with me a stranger that she couldn't look up, and she went right to him and brought through his dad. And again, it's an open seating kind of thing. She just walks right up to people. Now for Conchetta, if you get a reading with her one-on-one, she sits with you and she doesn't ask questions. She just tells you what she hears. But in these larger format things, because she wants to get to a lot of people, she'll walk up to a person and say, tell me your first name and who are you here to reach? And, you know, they'll say, I'm Peter. I want to talk to my dad, Joe. And then she says that's like it gives her validation to tap into the phone line.
Mm-hmm.
So that gives her the information faster versus her standing in front of a room just wondering what's going to come to her, which is kind of how Rebecca works, kind of how Echo works, kind of how Thomas works. You know, they stand in a space and let the spirits kind of dictate where the night is going to go.
So, I'm going to slaughter this name, so correct me, because I know I'll get it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Paul mm-hmm. Selig.
No, you got it perfect. Paul Selig.
Okay.
Yeah, he's the one who channels where his eyes turn color.
Oh, you've got to tell the audience about that, because we've spoken on this show about people having manifestations like that. I want them to hear it from someone else's perspective.
Well, here's what he does. So he does it twofold. So sometimes when he's channeling, he'll just get so into his zone that his eyes turn color. And when I was interviewing him for my podcast at, you know, WGN Studios in Chicago, I'm sitting there across from him and asking him questions. And when the guides come through for him, he talks at 100 miles an hour, and then they say you have to forget, you have to let it go, and you have to let it go, because the otherwise, you know, and that's how. So he'll hear it really fast and bark it out like a, you know, a fast forward recording, and then he'll say it slowly. And so sometimes when he goes on a monologue, that's when his eyes change color. But when I saw his eyes change color, I was asking him about my son, and what he does is he becomes what he calls a medium for the living. So you can ask him about someone who is alive, and he will tap into their energy and become them. So he opens his eyes real wide, and then all of a sudden his hazel eyes turn to light blue, which was my son's eye color. And then he starts talking in my son's tempo and tone, which is really wild for like a 60-year-old man to become 10. It's really interesting, but that's what happened. And so then I asked him about my mother. Same thing. He just closed his eyes and became my mother and brought through her tone and hello and like her exact sing-song voice and all these things. It was really fascinating. So in addition to the channeling that he does where he gets these downloaded messages for everyone's highest good, you could also ask him about personal one-on-one things, people in your life, challenges that are coming up, and he gives you the perspective on that. And I chronicle all of that in chapter 6 of my book, so you can kind of see all the different ways that he works, because it is a very, you know, he's a total variety pack, let me tell you.
I'm glad you included that. And I will tell you why. We have bounced around the idea on this show, once again, from our collective experiences. It is totally possible to do an invocation of people who are not deceased.
Yes.
You could tap that channel, you could tap that wavelength of energy, and you can draw information. And that's something that very rarely gets put out there. I'm glad you put that, you included that experience in the book.
Yes, and it was a first for me. I had heard of it, but I'd never seen it firsthand. And so I'm one of those people, and I think a lot of people are, that if you're going to become a believer of something, you have to experience it for yourself. You can't just have someone tell you. You know, change comes from inspiration, not imposition. So if someone comes knocking at your door and says, I want you to believe in Jesus, you're going to be like, slam. But if you have a moment where you feel God, then maybe you'll call on Jesus. You know, I mean, who knows?
Right.
But you have to experience it for yourself. So it has to be inspired.
Wow. So out of curiosity, did your son or your mother report back to you anything, feeling anything odd during that time frame?
Not a thing.
Okay.
Not a thing at all. Yeah, no. And it was interesting because I know they've read the book. My son hasn't, but I told him what happened and he thought that was super cool. But then he wanted to know what he said. And I told him exactly what he said and he was like, oh, that's true. Because actually, it's not a secret. I can share it because I wrote about it in the book. My son wanted to know. He wanted to know the truth. Like, his father and I were going through a rough patch in our divorce, and so we were trying to keep it from him, like a lot of people do. They try to shield their children from the sadness or from the chaos. But they really know what's going on. They're smart. They figure it out. And so the more we try to hide things from them, the more then their mind starts creating scenarios that could be so much worse than the truth. And that's exactly what was happening with my son. He was creating these dramatic things that were not even on the radar because we weren't telling him what was really happening. And so when I told him that, he was like, oh, yeah, he's right. I'm like, okay, well then, validation.
Nice.
Yeah.
So Dr. Judith Orloff.
Yeah, Orloff, yeah.
There you go. Thank you.
Yeah, you know, she got on the map because she talks about psychic vampires, energy vampires, people that suck the life out of you, people in your life, not dead or spirits on the other side, but people in your life that suck the life out of you. And in her first bestseller, Positive Energy, she writes a lot about that and how you can protect yourself from that because she's an empath and her latest book is an empath survival guide. And people who are severely intuitive and sensitive and empathic sometimes absorb sludge that is not theirs or energy that is not theirs or worry that is not theirs, which is what my son was doing. And so for her, she's so, you know, she's the one I was saying that her parents put her in an institution. Her parents put her in an institution because she was so intuitive as a kid. She would know when the neighbors were going to get divorced or when her uncle was going to die. And her parents were medical doctors in Beverly Hills, and they didn't want to hear it. They were like, no, please stop. So they put her in an institution because she was acting out, and she turned to drugs and alcohol. And when she got out and got a great psychiatrist that told her she should embrace her intuition, she finally felt comfortable doing so. But her whole life, her parents fought it. And Judith went on to be a medical doctor and become a psychiatrist and wrote 8 New York Times bestsellers. And not until her mom was on her deathbed did her mom finally admit to her that intuition runs in the female side of their family. Oh. And the mom was just hoping it wouldn't hit Judith. But it did. And then she died.
Oh.
Thanks, Mom, for a lifetime of doubt and angst, you know.
But great. We're just going to try to whip this out of you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, at least she knows now that it comes from, you know, a lineage in the family. I mean, she always knew she had it, but now she knew that she wasn't the only one.
Well, there's another great reason for you folks out there in Para-X land and beyond to pick up this book, because I'm sure we have listeners who have struggled with similar things. naturally gifted people, and you face persecution from your family or from your church or from where you know, whatever situation you grew up in, it's good to hear the stories of other people that have struggled like you.
Exactly, and that's how I get a lot of content for my books, really, is people sharing with me their stories and wanting advice, wanting wisdom. And if any of these, you know, if anybody listening out there has a child that might be talking to imaginary friends, or you're concerned because they're so hypersensitive, just listen to them, make them feel safe, let them share their stories with you, and also help them protect themselves. Because one of the things, like, my son is highly intuitive, and he's been able to see my dead dad since he was two. So part of this research, I have to say, was selfish on my part, because I wanted to know, I wanted a manual for how to help him cope, because he's tapping into a dimension I can't tap into. And he's also a regular 11-year-old who likes Star Wars and kickball. So, you know, it's a complicated mixed bag. But I know that I make him feel safe to talk about it. And he doesn't talk about it at school, but he does talk about it at home. And he shuts down his gift when he doesn't feel it's acceptable. And he might shut it down for a couple of years, for all I know. I don't know. But when he decides to embrace it again, I'll let him know. And for him to be able to meet some of these people that come through town, and I do these shows with them, and I interview them for my books or my podcast or whatever, for him to see that there are other people like that out there that are making a living doing this, but also trying to heal others at very large masses, that's important. And so using these gifts to help heal others and help others raise their vibration is what it's all about. Not bringing other people down to a negative level. But when they're highly sensitive and open to this stuff, they can be exposed to negative energies also. It's because, you know, light is light, and some people want to squash the light, and some spirits want to squash the light. So, you know, we have to learn all these tools to protect ourselves, like Judith teaches about the energy vampires. We could walk around unconscious all day long, and guess what? We might be tired at the end of the day because we're picking up other people's gunk. It's like the lint roller that you roll on that person's carpet who has five cats. That's what we're becoming. And we have to clean our energy fields off. And that's what meditation helps us do.
Yes. Meditation is also important for those who embrace the idea of being a vampire. Unfortunately, some people do.
There you go.
You can pull that energy from the environment without tapping into other people.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But that's something we've preached time and time again.
I bet.
Okay. Carolyn Miss?
Carolyn Mace, yeah. It's Mace. Spelled Miss, but pronounced Mace, believe it or not. Okay. Yeah, she's a medical intuitive. I was telling you that when she turned 30, her gift hit her, but she had a sort of spidey sense from a very young age. And, you know, she can look at someone and tell you why they are ill. It's fascinating.
Oh, wow.
And she's been working with Norm Shealy for decades, doing 12,000-plus readings. Norm is a Harvard, you know, brain surgeon, so no schlub. And so if he's got a patient that can't get healed, he'll call Carolyn. He just tells Carolyn their name. She looks him up in the universe, the ethers, whatever you want to call it, taps in and says, oh, yeah, there's some kidney inflammation that's due to fear of not being good enough and trying to prove something to her parents. She needs to let go of that and realize, you know, it's all self-approval and doubt. You know, tell her to let go of that and the kidney will stop being inflamed. I mean, it's like, oh, wow. Like that. What? So cool. So, yeah. So I had her do a live event, and she read a bunch of people in the crowd. And it's just amazing, her insights from doing this for so many decades. She's like, I'm not here to convince anybody. If they don't believe me, they can get lost. I mean, she is not the nurturing Conchetta Bertoldi or Judith Orloff. She basically, I think, was Mother Teresa in a past life. I mean, sorry, Mother Superior. Let me rephrase that. She was a Mother Superior. And so she pins your ears back and says, you know, she doesn't have time for this crap. Either get on board or get out. Because she thinks we're all a bunch of lazy, entitled, you know. She has a lot of trouble with this woo-woo movement of people just thinking they can go buy some crystals and everything's going to be okay. You know, vision board, schmision board. She's like, look, maybe your destiny is to suffer a little bit so that when you do have something more, you appreciate it. Stop trying to, you know, manifest that diamond ring or that Porsche. It's not going to make you happy. So she has a very cutthroat vision of spirituality that I respect quite a bit, but it's very different from some of the others I interviewed.
Yes, and it's the practical people that I appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
Seriously, stop reaching for the moon when you need to get out of, be able to get to the next state, over the state line first. Whatever.
Right. Exactly. No, it's so true. And, you know, she goes to these conferences and she speaks at these Celebrate Your Life and all this stuff. And it's like everyone just wants to, you know, find out where the gold is buried and, you know, sing Kumbaya and get massages. And for her, it's being in the trenches and helping people who have nothing build houses and praying for people you don't know. You know, I interviewed a woman named PMH Atwater. This isn't in the book. This was on my podcast recently. She does a lot of research on near-death experiences. This woman died 3 times in 3 months, suffering from different complications, medical complications. And I was like, no offense, honey, but you need a new doctor. But I digress. Anyway, she does research on all of this stuff, and she researched some kids who died under the age of 5, a bunch of kids who died and lived to talk about it, came back. And one thing that they said that they reported when they were on the other side is that they could see prayers going from one person to the other, like a rainbow going from one heart to the other. And wow. I just think about that. Isn't that powerful? Like, oh my gosh. So what are we going to send from our energy field? Hate, resentment, fear, or are we going to send a rainbow from our heart? You know, because at the end of the day, it is our responsibility to help others and raise that vibration. And sometimes it means getting a little dirty, our knees scraped, right? You know, we got to get down and roll up our sleeves and get to the nitty gritty. And sometimes it's really peaceful and wonderful too, but you can't have one without the other.
So we're coming up on the top of the hour, Jennifer. I want you to put your website back out there again for the folks listening. Then let everybody know if you have any book signings coming up or what your next... I know you mentioned some of your live appearances coming up, but let's talk about what you're doing specifically for yourself.
Yes, jenweigel.com, JenWeigel.com. We've got the gigs tab there. And I'll be hopping around. I'm doing some stuff in the Midwest, like I mentioned, Minneapolis. I'm going to St. Louis. I think I'll have to come to Ohio. What the heck? I was talking about doing a Michigan thing. There's all sorts of possibilities. So very open to, you know, people reaching out to me and saying, hey, please come to our area. We'd love to bring a medium your way and do a show. Thomas, John, and I have literally just packed up and gone to places where we feel that there is an audience. So we would definitely be open to exploring. Yeah. So thank you so much for having me on. I'm so grateful. Keep doing what you're doing.
Thank you very much for coming in and being so honest and sharing these personal experiences. I think people need to hear what you're saying.
Well, I hope so. We got to keep talking. That's the only way we're going to evolve.
Well, with that, if you stay on the line for a moment, I'm going to let the Illuminous take us on out with our outro music. Everybody have a great week. I will hopefully be speaking to you again next Tuesday.